Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo. I'm broadcasting to you from magnificent Anchorage, Alaska, where blue skies and sunshine are beaming down on all of us here in this fabulous state. And for those of you listening, wherever you might be, I hope that you are enjoying the wonderful aspects of spring. And today we are going to have a wonderful guest who has a history that I think is fabulous. He is a basketball coach. His name is Chuck Randall. But this man is more than just a basketball coach. He is a man that has influenced the lives of hundreds of young people. And through his book, My Impossible Dream, he'll touch the lives of even more. I want to welcome to the show Chuck Randall. Hello, Chuck. How are you?
Better when I hear you talk about me.
Oh, Chuck, you have got such a phenomenal history. Now, I want to let you know that Barbara Anderson, I met her at the women's show where I was participating and hosting a forum in March. And I found out about your book. And while I was standing there, and you won't remember me, but I was introduced to you. And I thought, this is really terrific. I have to tell you right off the bat, I am not one of these big sports people, but what I do love are stories about people, whether they're in sports or any other activity, that have really something special to share, and you do. Not only have you been a coach, but you are also an inventor. But before we get into that, I really would like for you to share how when you were in the fourth grade, you knew you wanted to become a coach. How did that happen?
Well, I was wanting to be a cowboy up to then, but my uncle was a coach in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, and he was a track and football coach. And my dad had taken me to a track meet where my uncle was a coach, and one of his runners just barely lost a race. And then I saw the kid go behind the bleachers, and he was crying. And I went and told my uncle about it. And so my uncle went around where he was under the bleachers, and he just put his arm around the guy, and the guy finally was smiling. And I thought, I want to be a coach. And that was the start.
Isn't it amazing how the action of a person can create something in us that says, I want to be that. I want to have an effect on people's lives the way he has. That is, to me, very, very significant. Now, you were born in Farmington, Washington. Your dad was a superintendent of schools. And you just, your mom was one of these dynamic gals. I mean, she was really someone that would fit in today's world just beautifully. She just had incredible energy and was willing to try anything and everything. And so was your sister was the same way.
Well, I'll tell you one thing is that my mom, she passed away when I was probably in second grade. And everybody was crying at the funeral, and I didn't cry. And I would try to, but I couldn't. But one of the things when I was in first grade, she had a LTL club, that's Loyal Temperance Legion. And there's about 10 of us in the group, and we all signed a thing that we'd never smoke or drink. And I was really loyal to it until the fourth grade. And then my cousin and I all smoked a cigarette. And I felt so bad after doing that that I haven't had a drink or a smoke ever since. And in fact, I was in World War II. I was in Japan after the war with a bunch of pro baseball players on a baseball team that traveled all over Japan. And when they'd go home, they said, you have to drink a toast to the guy going home. And because of my mom, when they weren't looking, I poured the dad-burned drink in the plant.
I didn't the poor plant?
Any, and so I still haven't tasted any alcohol. But what I do understand now, being 85 years old, that probably all of us, the life we have, till the time we're five or six or so far with our mothers are a major part of what we're going to be.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think so. And I think your family, the way that you were raised, there was such a sense of integrity. There was a real attitude about wanting to be sure that you were honest, and hard work was something that was not just expected, but you felt that that in and of itself, if you did what you needed to do well, then that was a reward too. So your ethics that you were raised with were very, very strong in your life. Now,
I think that's true for everybody.
Mm-hmm, absolutely true. Now, baseball was your favorite sport for a long time. What turned you on to basketball?
Well, I got in high school, baseball was my favorite sport clear up into high school, but in high school I had a coach by the name of Ray Thacker at Central Valley High School that really, I say, turned me on, and our baseball coach wasn't that exciting, and so I still love baseball, but basketball became my major interest from then on, and we actually got to the state tournament in Seattle my junior and senior year both, so that was something for a little school.
Now, when you started out, you said that coaching, you had gone to college, and you really weren't that strong in academics. You said it was really very tough for you. But when it came to sports, you really excelled, and your passion for coaching was something that, well, it became the love of your life in many respects, other than your beautiful wife, Doris. It was really the love of your life. And you really cared about the young people that were under you. But tell us about your early years of coaching, because coaching jobs were not that common.
Yeah, well, I think you're right. I was in love with him. In fact, my buddy that I went to high school with once said that that people say I have a one-track mind, just basketball. And he said they are wrong. It's one rail. So that's a little bit of the truth, I think.
Now, you were training, you were working, and it was not easy for you to get started in the coaching element, but you really began by getting a positioning at a high school. And you said that the kids, they were good kids, but a number of them had been expelled from school because of, you know, bad behavior. They're getting in trouble. Sounds a lot like what goes on today with a lot of young people. This was a challenge. How did you handle that?
Well, I guess that one real mind probably was a major part of why I tried to put that into people, and I guess one time I was coaching in Lynn, Washington, and we had a good preacher there, and I thought what I got to do is get out of this coaching and go be a missionary or something of that type, and so I went and told him this preacher I think I should do that, and he says, hey, you're already doing it. You do it in your sport. Just stay with what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that made me stay more than ever, I guess.
Well, I know with this particular group that you got, you learned that the coach that had been at the school before had smoked with the kids. In other words, he really was supportive of behavior that was not in the standard that you would have expected from a coach. When you replaced him, you really had to get tough. And that's what you did. And the kids that were not willing to accept the rules, you threw them off the team.
Well, not very many. I think in my whole coaching career, I lost maybe one or two kids. And in fact, I got a call from a fellow by name Ed Monk that played for me, and I just got it yesterday. And what he's turned out to be one of the greatest guys in the world, I'd say. But at I remember him doing something in the gym that I didn't like, and I went to him and I said, "Ed Monk, you doing that again? You're going to be in trouble." In fact, this college, probably 500 years from now, may not be here. But if you do that again, you'll be here because I'll kill you and bury you in the spot.
Oh, my Lord.
Anyhow, he called me, and today he's one of the most fantastic guys in the world. I'd say his whole life is to help other people, and he's had taken a kid from India, I guess it was, that he had taken him home, and he's like a son to him. And also he... where he came from, they have a school, and they need money in that school to keep the little kids going, and he raises money and sends it to them. Now, this is probably 10 years later.
Mm-hmm. The influence of an adult on a young person, especially young men, is extremely important, and I think sports is something that offers the opportunity to teach them discipline, to teach them about integrity, to teach them about the spirit of wanting to win, of good sportsmanship. There's so many positive qualities that can be taught, because you have to work. If you're going to be a part of a basketball team, you have to understand you're not playing all by yourself. You are part of a team, and it is that building of harmony. And you talk about defensiveness in your book, My Impossible Dream, and you talk about how important it is to have a good defense strategy when you're playing the sport. And you go into quite a bit of detail of that. And I think when it comes to young people, that this is something that's so important. When you were working with these young men at the time that you started out with coaching, and of course you graduated and you ended up getting some phenomenal championships and you've been acknowledged, you've won so many awards, my goodness, it's hard to count them. You've been recognized by so many people because of the standards that you had with your players. When you look at what's going on in the games today, when you hear the stories about the various athletes and the commercialism of the sport, how do you feel about that, Chuck?
Boy, it's a different world. I don't know how to... I would like to try to coach in today's, but I got a hunch that the things that I did in my time may not be bought by the players today. One thing is that the athletes are way more... I never saw anybody dunk a ball until I was coaching about 10 years. And now high school kids dunk, and mm-hmm. it's a different world, and I'm not sure that my world would fit into this world, but I wouldn't mind giving it a try.
What do you think in today's world is really needed in the sports arena, in the area of basketball, which is such a passion for you? If you were to make a suggestion to anyone who's coaching today, and also to young people, what would you want them to know?
Well, I guess this would be the thing. You know, I coach baseball and basketball, and my assistant coach was an ex-pro ball player in my first year of coaching at Western and in baseball, and he really helped me, and we did pretty well. And then he got the job at Seattle Pacific, and so he is the head baseball coach in Seattle Pacific. And he came up and played us, and they beat us pretty badly on our field. And then we had to play them, and when we got there, the game was delayed for a pretty near an hour. So my team and I were sitting on a hillside, and one of the players said, what do you like coaching better, basketball or baseball? And I said, basketball. And they said, why? I said, well, in basketball, the players are caring about each other. They're trying to make each other look good. In baseball, you guys are just interested in your own batting average and your own thing. And so it's an individual thing rather than a team thing. And one of them said, well, let's do in baseball like they did in basketball. And they all kind of agreed, and we went out and played Seattle Pacific and beat them really bad on their field after they had beat us. And then we went on and got into and kept winning, and the difference in the team was major. We actually got to play in a national tournament with that team. And so I guess whatever it is, if you're playing baseball, basketball, or volleyball, or just going to church, caring about each other is a major part of the world.
I agree. I think that's so important. Now, you knew Lenny Wilkins.
Yeah, not well, but I knew who he was, and
yes,
we had some association, right?
Right, because he is very strongly recognized, as you are, in the game of basketball. In fact, he's still active in the Seattle area relative to certain activities. And you really found that you could do all kinds of things that nobody expected you to do. And one of the stories that you had was when you were getting ready to play Seattle Pacific University, the Falcons, and their coach was Les Habiger, you needed to warm your team up, but you didn't want them to feel like your team was really going to be much to battle against. So you went and did your warm-up practice in the women's gym. How did you get away with that without them knowing that?
I don't know, except that we did, and then when we jumped ball, I had my shortest kid in the team jump the center instead of the big kid, but we knew where they tipped it, and so he tipped it where we knew, and we stole the ball and went for a lay-in, and we were ahead, I guess, about 6 or 8 points before they realized we got in the gym, and we did went ahead and won the game.
So you were always...
Lenny Wilkins, he was the coach then, I think.
You always had this inventive side of yourself, but I had to chuckle about the story of the kangaroo in Australia.
Hey, let me break in just on Lenny Wilkins.
Yes.
The pro team in Seattle, their basketball team, and got Russell became their coach, a pro ball player, and I went down and watched them, and gosh, I didn't think they were being coached very well. And so I phoned the owner of the team, and he said, well, what would you do? And I said, well, I'd have Lenny Wilkins or Dean from Central, one of those two coaches, go and coach there. And he did have Lenny become the assistant coach there, and they made a major jump in basketball in Seattle over that change.
That's a fabulous story. You never know who's going to do what that'll create a change that makes the difference. The story about your kangaroo, you apparently were recognized by a number of people that said you smuggled a kangaroo out of Inverell. You have got to share that story, because that is something not many people, I think, know about.
Well, we took a trip all over the whole country and world, I should say, with a basketball team, and we were in Australia playing, and they had us playing off in a little town. My head isn't good enough to remember names of things, but a little town away from the big cities, and we got there. A lot of the people were kangaroo hunters. And so they asked me if I wanted to go kangaroo hunting with them, and I said, yeah, I'd like to go. And so we went on a kangaroo hunt, and when we got there, somebody shot a kangaroo, and let's see, that was in Inverell, I guess. Anyhow, they shot a kangaroo, and it had a little baby in its pouch. And I felt so bad about the baby in the pouch that I said, could I have it? And they said, sure. They went and got the baby, and I had it, but it died before I even got within the hours. And so when I left Inverell, they gave me a present of a baby kangaroo. And so I took it with me. I was going to take it to the United States. But when I was in, my head can't come up with the right names of the cities, but the major city there, they said, hey, you can't take a kangaroo. It's illegal to even have it. And you can't get it on a plane or anything. I was going to sneak it on anyhow, but they took it and gave it to a museum, and I didn't bring a kangaroo home, but I still wished I could have.
Yeah, I think if you think you had challenges with basketball players, you definitely would have had one with that kangaroo. You are an inventor, and you invented a special rim, and it was because you would observe what would happen and the costs of damaged rims, et cetera. Tell us that story about how your innovative rim came into form.
Well, to start with, my budget at Western was really low. They did something that I think turned out to be really important, but half the budget went to the women, and that would be the only university or college in the whole United States where the women got the same amount that the men did.
Oh, and, for heaven's sakes.
And our women really did well. And that was the start of women basketball being as great as it is today. And I think that was a major start in it, so I'm glad they did. But when I was coaching, I wasn't glad they did. And but anyhow, I didn't have the money to buy a new rims, and I had a ball player from down in West Lynn, Ernie McKee, my buddy, sent me a ball player that was pretty big and he could jump good, and he bent the rim, and I took it over to the shop and had him straighten it, and we bent it back and put it back up, and then it bent again, and it was starting to bend easier and easier, and I thought, hey, we should do like in a commercial fish, a propeller, if it hits a rock, it shears rock, pins two bolts rather than wrecks the prop. And I thought, well, we should do that with a basketball rim. So I went to the shop over in the college and told them my idea. And so they helped me build a rim that had two bolts in the top, and when they pulled on it, it just sheared the bolt, and that was the first breakaway rim ever. And then I came up with the idea of, instead of that, to have a spring in it, and so that it holds it up, and you pull it, and the spring would allow it to come and so forth. And so we made that, and then we had to throw it back up then, and then we put a spring in the front, so that when it came down, the spring pushed it back up. And that was, we had that rim in a national tournament in Kansas City. They had an exhibition game. And then, by then, another company had come up with the idea of a rim. And they had a rim at one end, and I had the rim at the other end. And so that was on TV. And so Paul Harvey talked about the importance of it. And then I guess the next step would have been that I had to decide whether I was going to stay coaching or be in the rim business. And I'm a coach, not a rim guy. And so I gave it to another guy and in Seattle, and he was to push it, and he did a pretty good job. But in the meantime, a lady had talked to me, and she went back east, and she started a rim. And, it's too long a story, but anyhow, I'll quicken it up by saying that it turned out that she would stealing our ideas and taking our money, and They were going to put her in a court, but they never could find her. She moved around so much. But that's a bad story. Let's let it get out of it.
Well, one of the things that happened when you invented this rim, and I know you were presenting it to the NBA, that there was a particular player, his name was Daryl Dawkins, and he was known as Dr. Dunk. He would dunk the ball so hard. Now, he was 6'11", and he weighed 251 pounds, and the backboard would literally explode every time he did it. And, of course, the backboard was made of safety glass. So when you were able to show the value of this to the NBA, it sort of was a hard sell, but my goodness, they were paying a fortune. I mean, this guy was doing such a good job of mucking everything up with a backboard, they would have a devil of a time because you couldn't play the game. Once that was gone and the rim was gone, you had to put something else up. So they were really hard-pressed to keep up with it. And you're right. You've got quite a story about someone that robbed you, stole from you, your concept, your idea. But your passion for coaching is very, very strong. And there is a comment that was made by a gentleman that is in the book, and it was Marv Harshman. He was the head basketball coach at the University of Washington. And he said this about you when you were nominated to the NAIA Hall of Fame. And he said, the important thing about Chuck Randall is his dedication to the game of basketball. He not only was the first to start the modern idea of basketball camps in the state of Washington, but also was a great innovator in attempting to improve the game in any way possible. He was the inventor of the basketball rim, the first and foremost of all collapsible type rims, which everyone copied from his idea. Chuck, when you look back on your life and your book, My Impossible Dream, it talks about your deep faith, the wonderful family life that you've had, and the appreciation of so many of the players because of how you influenced them. Your belief in integrity and commitment, perseverance, again, the word discipline, the big D that so many times people don't like to hear. But you set an example for the young men, and they were part of your family. You ended up with an extended family of literally thousands of people. When you look back on this, and as you're living your life right now, what is it that you would want to leave in the way of a message for those that are listening today? Maybe they've got kids in their family that love sports, want to do things. What kind of a message would you want to give to my audience?
Hey, let me break it just enough to say this on Harshman. When I was coaching at Lind, 60 kids in the school, Marv Harshman was at Washington State University coaching, and he left that to give a talk for my banquet at to a little school like Lynn. And that's that kind of a guy I love, man. That's why I think he was the greatest guy and one of the greatest coaches in the world. And to answer your other question is, I guess the one thing is, in coaching, you do have a chance to influence people, and I think there's a feeling of closeness between players and coach and players and themselves, and that's the major thing that I think all coaches should try to do is emphasize the fact that players need to love each other and give to each other. But next to that, I guess I would kind of say this, we're getting to the end of this, I guess, so I would say when I was coaching was a big thing in my life. Now I'm 85 years old and I look back at it and it was big, but there's one thing that's a dang sight bigger, and that happened to be a guy and his wife and his family. That's a major thing, and I think we underestimate the value that has in people's lives, and they need to teach that in high school so they understand the importance of marriage and the importance of a wife and a husband and what the family importance is, so that we grow up with that idea rather than have it just happen to us.
Chuck Randall, you have a fabulous history. You have touched the lives of so many. And your book, My Impossible Dream, I think should be a must-read for just about every high school kid around, girls and boys alike, because they need to know that achievement doesn't come because someone waves a magic wand over your head. It comes because you have a heart, because you care, and because you demand excellence. And that's what you did with your players and the stories in your book about the various individuals who went on to have not just phenomenal careers in the game, but also very successful lives because of the wonderful lessons that you were able to impart to them via a fabulous sport, the game of basketball. Chuck, do you have a website that people can go to find out more about you and your history and what you've done?
Yeah, I don't know. I do, but my wife handles that. I don't even know how to run a computer.
I gotcha. Well, for those of you listening, if you're interested in finding out more about
Barbara,
a man...
Barbara probably could tell you that on
yes.
my website. She
I will
on it.
Yes, I will do that. Chuck Randall, R-A-N-D-A-L-L. Look him up on the web. You'll find the information there, and it's really worth checking it out. When you have the opportunity to meet someone who is listed in the Hall of Fame and who is still going strong in so many ways and has this fabulous book, My Impossible Dream. Also, there's another one, Coach, God Loves You and So Do I. Chuck Randall, thank you so much for being my guest, Hall of Fame basketball coach and inventor of the Slam Dunk Rim.
Hey,
check it out.
I'll end this by saying you're really lucky that I'm not still coaching, because if I was, you'd be on my team.
Thank you, Chuck. That is a wonderful compliment. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Thank you, Chuck, again for being my guest today. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. Telephone lines are now open. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And if you're a first-time listener, all I need from you is your first name or your initial, and then after that, well, you're welcome. When I give you information after that, you're welcome to ask me a question about anything that you like. Being up here in Alaska, it's always an adventure to discover how Alaskan spirit is very much strong and innovative. And wanted to share with you some information about wine. When you're up in Alaska, you know that it's bitter cold. You don't have very much of anything. People that have tried to farm in Alaska have always had a very, very difficult time. Well, it came to my attention that there is something called the Alaska grape. Now, I was amazed to find out that in this state, there are 11 wineries. Does that compute in your head? I don't know. For me, I thought, Alaska, you've got to be kidding. How in the world could they have wineries? Well, Alaska produces over, or the businesses, the wineries in Alaska, produce over 5,000 gallons of wine a year. Now, some of it is made from grape juice that is processed in the lower 48. However, there is a winery in the Anchorage area that combines this with fruit that grows up here. Yes, there is Alaskan fruit. What is it? Berries. They have blueberries, huckleberries, salmon berries, and they just do all kinds of combinations with their grape juice. They even use crab apples and rhubarb. Now, up here, they have their farming that they do. There's that that's out in the open, but there's also that that is totally controlled, and it is in protected environments. Well, they don't have a real syrupy taste, these wines. They've got them processed, and they've become so popular because people think that because they're made from berries, they're going to be that sugary, sweet wine. Often that's called a winter wine that is made, and it's like a dessert wine. Well, that's not the case. And do you know what? The Alaskans were very innovative in what they utilized and how they did the business, and now it is going strong. Who would have thought that out of the state of Alaska, that wine would be one of their exports? It's hard to believe, but people from all over the world absolutely love it, and it's no longer a novelty. People really like it. So check it out, because it is something that I think is just amazing. It goes to show how we human beings have a knack of being able to take what seemingly is impossible and make it possible. And I think that it is so amazing how we can become innovative, what we can do. And speaking along that line, I thought I would share with you some information that I just came across, and it's about a miniature flying carpet. Now, most of us have heard the stories of the Arabian Nights, and, you know, if you watch Disney's movie Aladdin, there's the flying carpet in there. And, of course, all of that is whimsical. Well, I'll tell you, there's a gentleman by the name of Mahadevan who said, well, why don't we make one? That's right. So as a scientist, he decided that he was going to explore an electrical-powered sheet. Yes, that's right. Now, this is what he did. He was a grad student, and he has this wonderful part of himself. He's just curious about things, absolutely curious. And in 2007, he was at Harvard. He decided he was going to try to enable a thin, flexible piece of material to fly above the ground. Now, this is what he determined. This thin sheet of material, if it vibrated at a certain frequency that created a wave-like motion, it would stay in the air. And he used the image of a manta ray. If you've ever seen a manta ray go through the water, it's just absolutely gorgeous to see. And it seems to just glide through the water. Well, that's what he kept in mind. Now, he decided that that was fun for a while, and he didn't build his flying carpet. But someone else, it was in 2008, a Princeton graduate student whose name was Noah Jaffaris, saw the paper that Mahadevan had written and put it to work. Now, he has taken, it's not very big, it's a 4 by 1.5 inch piece of plastic. However, he's gotten it so it propels through the air. And he did this with two sheets of coated plastic fastened together and divided into four sections. And when he applies electricity to it, part of the surface contracts while the other expands, causing the sheet to bend in the shape of a moving water wave. Think of every flying carpet image that's ever been on the screen or described in a book. It's always looked like a wave.
It's really amazing. So he said he can keep it moving. As long as he keeps it moving, it stays aloft. And he's gotten it through certain wires. He is in the process of trying to figure out how he can attach the power source on this piece of plastic. And he said, doing a flying carpet, like we've seen in the movies, as imaginations have portrayed it, he would say that it would take a surface 50 feet wide to carry one person. And it would just be a millimeter or two off the ground, but it would float. What do you think? Jetsons, here we come. For those of you that's ever watched the cartoon Jetsons, where we have those little flying saucers that he'd drive into work, well, it looks like we're getting closer and closer to that. Using energy to create propulsion is not really a new idea. That's been around for a long time. But doing it so that it could be self-generating, causing us to be able to fly, can you imagine the difference that would make with the energy situation we've got now? It would bring in a whole new vista, new industries invented because of one student saying, I wonder if I can do this. And I think that's something we need to remember. We need to reopen to new ideas, to new concepts, and that is what enables us to deal with sometimes the change that we need. Whether it is growing something in a greenhouse to create wine or learning how to develop a flying carpet, it doesn't make any difference. It's innovation. It's stepping outside of the box. It's going further than maybe someone else has dared to go. Why not try it? Your life will be richer for it. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to take a break for just a minute. I'm up here in Anchorage, Alaska. I'll be back in studio tomorrow in Washington. And by the way, before we take a break, we are going to have two guests tomorrow. This is sort of in celebration of Mother's Day. Joan Anderson, we're going to be talking about Mom Knows Best, and then Betsy Robinson and Conversations with Mom. Both of these ladies are going to be delightful, and this is in celebration for Mother's Day that is coming up this weekend, a day that, well, all of us like to respect and appreciate those that have had such a powerful influence on our lives, our moms. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com, that's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N, and find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007, that's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. I want to remind those of you who are listening from the state of Washington, this coming Saturday, the day before Mother's Day, I'm going to be doing a special event at the Ascension into Life Foundation, which is at 1222 South Weller Street in Seattle. I'm going to be doing what's called flower readings, and this is just a lot of fun. And what you are required to do, if you'd like to participate in this for the small fee of $25, you bring an arrangement of flowers that you yourself, plants, flowers that you yourself have put together. And then I will not be present
when you have done this, when you bring it into the room, we're going to be putting everything on a table, and then afterwards, after everybody has arrived, then I'll be coming out, and then I'll be reading the flowers. I'll be telling you how you can do this. It's a wonderful, wonderful event to do. It's a great thing to consider to do for your mom. And come on down, and again, check out the phone number and the information on how to get to the Ascension and Delight Foundation in Seattle. Go to my website, DelphiInternational.com, and you'll find all of those details there regarding my appearance there and other appearances that I'm going to be having this month. And if you want to meet with me or chat with me for a private session, then call my office at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604. All right, we want to know how to save money. Everybody is always interested in a good bargain and a good deal. And I came across some tips that I thought that would be helpful to you. One of the things that we all enjoy is going out to a movie. So many of us will go to Redbox, or we'll have certain subscriptions with our cable companies so that we can enjoy our movies at home. But if you really like going out to the theater, there seems to be something magical when you go out. Well, lots of times, you're going to end up paying $12 for a ticket. Well, why do that? There are ways that you can save on this, and this is what you can do. You can go in and check out to gofobo.com, that's G-O-F-O-B-O.com, or filmmetro.com, filmmetro.com. Now, why should you look at this? Well, what is going to happen is that when you go in there, you go to your own area that you live in, wherever it may be, and they will tell you about free film screenings. That's right. The screenings are made available to the public. You can reserve and print your own tickets, and usually the typical situation is that they will give you a reservation for two, so you can take a friend or that significant person in your life. And you need to remember, when you get this, if you download your tickets online, you want to make sure that you have your RSVP code happen. So you will need to go to rsvpcodes.com. Boy, technology has changed the way we do things big time. And if you want to get into certain events. What if you love opera and you would love to be able to see operas, but it's just not in your budget? Maybe you want to go to ball games, or there's certain concerts. Well, if you really want to do it and your budget is so tight, think of volunteering at your favorite venue. And you probably will be able to get into most events for free. And also, they have part-time jobs. If you'd like to make a little bit of money enjoying the thing that you really, really love, well, volunteer for part-time jobs. You'll be able to see the event and get paid at the same time. It's really quite exciting. And I know I have a friend that did that with operas. She absolutely loved opera. So she decided she was going to work part-time, and she was able to get free tickets for every event that was there. She said it was one of the most enriching experiences that she had ever had, and she said, I made money at the same time, too. Also, for those of you ladies that really love the spas, and you look at your budget every month and you go, oh, I'm sorry, I just can't afford that $100 facial. I love it. I just feel so pampered when I have it. Well, you've got an option. You can check with your local spas and see if they offer a shorter vision of your favorite service, whatever that might be. And you can also check out online. You can go to spafinder.com and find out what is available, so that you may find out about different places you didn't even know existed. And also, if there is a school where they're training people in procedures and learning how to give facials and pedicures and manicures and this type of thing, you might find that you're able to get a very good bargain, feel like $1 million, and not muck up your budget too much. Very, very important. And of course, one of the favorite things for most people to do is to go to restaurants, check out what you can find on sale. You might be able to get a $25 coupon for as little as $2. And it comes from a woman by the name of Natalie McLean. She said, you can become a Facebook fan
of restaurant.com, and you can be alerted to sales in restaurants, special packages, special programs that they will offer, and you'll be able to see what you can do for a minimum amount of money. Again, there's all kinds of ways that you can really become alert to that enables you to make that green dollar of yours go a lot further. Donna Sebo here, and telephone lines are open at 888-627-6008. Well, I want to let you know about the guests that are coming up. Tomorrow, as I mentioned, we're going to be celebrating Moms and Moms Day. Then on Wednesday, we're going to be talking about the lost world in America. Frank Joseph is going to be my guest. And archaeologists are really making some phenomenal discoveries. And what they're discovering about North America is that there was a lot more going on before anybody came across on the land bridge. There were cultures and civilizations that were here thousands and thousands of years ago. So we're going to be finding out about that wonderful aspect of knowledge. And then if you are a person that has back problems, if you're an individual that is challenged in ways like my girlfriend's daughter-in-law, she was doing some work, she moved the wrong way, ended up being on all fours on the floor, could not lay down, couldn't move, her entire back had gone into spasm. Well, we're going to be talking with a wonderful physician, Dr. Jay Lipoff, and find out how you don't need to have those things happen to you, and if they do, what you can do about it. So we'll be talking about wellness on Thursday, and then on Friday, Rebecca Fannin is going to be my guest. Her book is about Startup Asia. China has been considered a very significant competitor in the world of manufacturing and high-tech enterprise. Well, we're going to find out what's going on in China and if there is something that we need to be aware of, but also how their innovation is beginning to be very much like America. So we're going to find out about what is going on over in Asia a week at the end of this week on Friday. So that's the lineup of guests that we have, and I hope that you will be able to join us. This is the Donna Sebo Show that has shifted from 3 in the afternoon to 9 o'clock in the morning Pacific time. Be sure to tell your friends so that they can listen in to these wonderful people. And also, if you would like to have a reading on the air with me, you can do that too by calling 888-627-6008. Well, I know we've just got a couple of minutes left, but I thought I would share something with you quickly. There is a real urgency on the part of many health professionals, encouraging people to really be attentive to their diet. I have a member of my own family who is in very critical situation right now physically, and primarily this has come about because they did not pay attention to their own wellness. They really had an attitude of, it's okay. I really think it's no big deal. I'll do whatever I want. I really don't need to pay that much attention to my own physical well-being. And consequently, they're in critical care at this time. The body can only go so far with abuse. You need to respect this temple that you have so that it is that you're occupying, your physical chassis, whatever, however you want to describe it, so that you're going to enjoy the best health possible. It is something that research is showing over and over and over again. What we put in our mouths affects how our bodies function. And it doesn't mean you can't have a piece of chocolate once in a while, but you need to respect and honor this physical vehicle. So I'm going to be sharing some recipes in the days to come that are going to be delicious. They'll maybe satisfy your sweet tooth or your desire for delicious food. But it's going to be of such a nature that it enables you to know that you can have good food, good flavor, that is healthy for you, that's not going to contribute to a very negative result in your life. And so many times we don't think of that. We don't realize that. And I was talking with someone, one of my clients, who said it really concerns them. They had an employee that was working for them. And this employee just was living on processed foods. Said, went to this employee and said, you're 50 pounds overweight. You're young. This is a person in their 20s. And they said, you need to start changing. I'm 70 years old. You're in your 20s. What are you doing here? And it's important that you honor and respect yourself. Remember always that you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. It's important for you to be good to yourself, take care of yourself, and live your life with a sense of passion, like my guest today, Chuck Randall, does. He still is about impressing people that they can make their lives rich and full by being the best they possibly can be, and you can do the same thing. This is Donna Sebo. I'm so delighted you were able to join me today. Be well, and I hope you'll join me tomorrow for Honoring the Moms of the World. This is Donna. Talk to you tomorrow, back in Washington. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.